from this, the work of all Donana laborers to the rest of the laboring of our forces and broadcasting from the small rebuilt and monsoon reinforced single wide trailer. Good morning,
Kelly O'Connell.
It is the seventh day of September. It is Labor Day. Congratulations if you're taking a break. I have a little bit of the history of Labor Day, if you're interested. And is from The Story of Liberty. Check it out.
Welcome back to The Story of Liberty. This is John Bona. You know, the year was 1882 when a man named Matthew McGuire, a machinist, first proposed Labor Day while serving as a secretary for a company. It's interesting that Oregon was the first state to make it a holiday in 1887. And by the time it became a federal holiday in 1894, 30 states officially celebrated Labor Day. It's also interesting that George Pullman, who founded the Pullman Railroad Sleeping Car Company in Chicago in 1893, was very successful, but right at that time there was a nationwide recession that kicked in and orders for his new railroad sleeping cars declined. Unfortunately, like today, many people lost their jobs, some were laid off. The ones that stayed had to take a cut in wages, and or the cost of living stayed the same or increased. Workers were dismayed. A young worker by the name of Eugene Debs, he led a strike against the Pullman Company, and railroad workers across the nation boycotted the Pullman cars. There was rioting and the burning of railroad cars, and it became a national issue when even the mail was interrupted. The president at the time, Grover Cleveland, declared the strike a federal crime. He deployed 12,000 troops to break up the strike. Men were killed in the disruption. Well, it was Congress, ultimately, that voted to approve Rush legislation, and they made Labor Day a national holiday. Cleveland signed it into law a mere 6 days later at the end of the strike. It was an election year, and Grover Cleveland knew that it would help his reelection if he appeased the workers, so he pushed for a national Labor Day. He chose the first Monday in September. This holiday of Labor Day, it's often regarded as a day of rest and parties. It's a big retail day, too, to take advantage of the large numbers of customers free to go shopping. It's become an important sale weekend for many retailers in America. Some retailers claim it's one of the largest sale days of the year, second only to the Christmas season. Labor Day has come to be celebrated by most of us here as a symbolic end to summer. Yes, it's back to school. Labor Day was considered the last day of the year when it was in fashion to wear white or seersucker. I don't see anybody wearing seersucker anymore. In sports, Labor Day marks the beginning of NFL and college football. College football, they usually play their first games of the week before Labor Day.
All right, so that's kind of a boring introduction, but anyway, kind of fills you in. Eugene Debs was an important person in the history of labor and unions. 1855 to 1926, one of the founding members of the Industrial Workers of the World, WWW, or Wobblies, and five times the candidate of the Socialist Party of America for President of the United States. And through his labors, he became one of the best known socialists in U.S. history. So anyway, it is the beginning of NCAA football. And so if your favorite team was playing, I will I'll have the scores for you in after the break, but very strange. You've got the US Open is going on. There's a very strange story. Eugenie Bouchard, who's about the most successful Canadian player of all time. Very young lady. Had to withdraw from the U.S. Open because of getting a concussion. She slipped and fell and hit her head into a locker, apparently, and was advised by the medical staff that she should drop out. So, kind of interesting. And it is 6:12. You're tuned in. If you're tuned in at all, 523-1450. I've got the texture, but it's out in the car. I got to go get it. 805-6180. It's pretty nice. I thought we might get a little bit of rain last night. At one point, it was 40% chance of rain, but that dropped back down to 20%. But I was kind of tracking the clouds. It's 77 degrees right now. High of 95, low of 68, and it's clear. I think something like 20% chance of rain. And, yeah, it's pretty nice out. We could use a little bit more water. So, anyway, what are you doing for, do you have plans? Are you out? Are you headed out somewhere? Hope you're going to have a good one. I know a lot of people left town, so. Anyway. 6:14, and we'll take a break and be back and cover some of the headlines. And it is live, 6:17, and here's some scores for you. Number 2, TCU, 23. Minnesota 17, number 16, Georgia Tech 69, Alcorn State 6, number 22, Arizona 42, Texas San Antonio 32, Carolina 17, and Oregon beat Eastern Washington. I'm looking for scores that might interest some of the folks here. That, by the way, was Thursday. Thursday, September 3. Friday, September 4. Number 4, Baylor 56, SMU 21. Number 5, Michigan State 37, Western Michigan 24. Number 23, Boise State 16, Washington 13. And coming down here to, well, I already mentioned TCU. I'm looking for Saturday. Okay, here's Saturday's. 17 Ole Miss, 76, UTM 3. Number 9, Georgia 51, Louisiana Monroe 14. Number 21, Stanford 6, Northwestern 16. Number 12, Clemson 49, Wofford 10. Number 18, Arkansas 48, UTEP 13. That's too bad. Number 6, Auburn, 31, Louisville, 24. I've got a really sad story for you, by the way. Number 13, UCLA, 34, Virginia, 16. Number 24, Missouri, 34, Southeast Miss, 3. And I got to see if I can find a clip of this. Number 8, USC, 56, Arkansas State, 6. Number 19, Oklahoma, 41, Akron, 3. Louisiana State, McNeese State was canceled. Number 14, LSU, because of weather. Number 7, Oregon, 61. Eastern Washington, 42. 174 plays in that particular game. Number 10, Florida State 59, Texas State 16. Number 3, Alabama 35, number 20, Wisconsin 17. See if I can. It's a sad but kind of an entertaining story. You're not going to believe it. It's just one thing after another for our local team. But anyway, our team got its bus ripped off. They burglared the bus. And I'm just looking at during the football game. I forgot I read that last night. Hopefully somebody's done a story on it. If you can believe that, I will have to keep sniffing around for it. So I've got, you know, what I decided to do was I found some clips on civil disobedience because it's starting to happen around the country that people are standing up to things like gay marriage. And so I thought I would find some clips on that, but I've got a bunch of stories before that first. Anyway, let's take a little break here and we'll be right back and I'll come back with the weather for you. All right, so I've got this clip. It's incredible. Here's one story that starts off saying the starting off the season with a 61-13 loss to Florida is a lousy way to begin the college football season. For New Mexico State, that feeling was made insurmountably worse after finding out that its bus was broken into and had been burglarized. Mario Mochio, director of athletics at New Mexico State, told the Las Cruces Sun News, "When I got back to the bus after the post-game press conference, I was informed that the bus had been broken into or left unattended. Everyone had stuff on the bus, including myself. There were work laptops, keys, identification stolen, but the worst thing was the work that was stolen." All right, so here is, without further ado, from IA, the story.
Game against the University of Florida.
The bus was parked across the Ben Hill Griffin Stadium in Gainesville, Florida. NMSU Athletic Director Mario Mocha sent out a series of tweets following the break-in saying, "Well, it's a first. Our bus was broken into and all athletic department staff and guest bags stolen inside. Not a joke.
Passport, laptops, house, car, work keys. But losing the paperwork is the worst. P.S. A lot of us can't drive home. We have no keys. Hashtag the struggle."
He went on to say, "Folks, the U of Florida Athletic Department were phenomenal this trip, and police are doing all they can. Bus drivers should have never left the bus."
And lastly, "Las Cruces, here we come. At NMS State Football, let's see which friends will pick us up since we don't have car keys. 4 a.m. And what a long night it was for them. They arrived back in town today."
Our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom caught up with Mario Mocha. ABC 7's Jamie Warren is live with the latest on this. Jamie.
Josie, I'm told the bus broken into was for employees and donors with the athletic department, not athletes. But according to our ABC affiliate, WCJB in Gainesville, Florida, recent robberies had police on high alert game day. The station reported that just last month, 5 robberies happened on or near the University of Florida within 2 weeks of each other.
It was one of those things where you're like, what?
NMSU's athletic director Mario Mocha tells me he was shocked after finding out laptops, iPods, passports, and keys were all stolen from their administrative bus outside the game. These are photos taken of the bus that night.
The 7 of us, you know, had to ride home at 4 a.m., so that made it a little uncomfortable.
Mocha tells me leaving items in the bus is usually proper protocol at away games.
You just don't lug your luggage into another visiting team stadium.
He says he doesn't know why the bus was left unattended. He's not sure if someone broke in or if the doors were left unlocked.
I personally, with my own eyes, didn't see a whole lot of damage.
Mocha tells me replacing all the paperwork will be the hardest.
you know, obviously there was a lot of university owned equipment.
He says while the stolen items are a big inconvenience, it won't stop the team from preparing for their big home opener.
We're not going to let this unfortunate incident, distract us too much, because we've got a lot of business going on in a very short week to have our first football game.
Mocha filed police reports with the university and the state, and he says they'll also file proper reports with the bus company. Gainesville police wasn't able to confirm how many incidents have happened recently on or near the campus, but they did tell me that every game day, sheriff's deputies, Gainesville police, and university police monitor the area before, during, and after the game. Josie?
Obviously not monitoring it too much. Well, if you notice, they did blame it on the bus driver, so maybe he left the door open or maybe not. All right, I've got some weather for you. Today's high is 96, low 71, 20% chance of rain, and I've got a clip here from KVIA.
Updated look at your storm track weather forecast and storm tracker Dan Martinez, and we'll start us off with a look at Future Track, our computer model. We run through the evening on your Sunday, we start to track some showers push into the El Paso area between about 8 o'clock into midnight, even lasting us overnight to about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. By 3 o'clock, we kind of clear things out. Notice by 8 o'clock in the morning on your Labor Day, things are going to be looking nice and clear for us. So if you're getting out early, maybe to do whatever type of task you need to take care of at home, things are going to be okay. Now, as far as the afternoon into the evening, no problems either. Most of the moisture really just stays over to our north, affecting the higher elevations. And you'll notice with our rain totals here, Future Track projecting close to about an inch for Ruidoso, El Paso, and Las Cruces. Lucky if we pick up anything at all. The next 7 days with the rain chances only stay at about a 20% chance from Monday all the way through Sunday. That's what forecast models are hinting towards as of right now. 65 degrees for TRC, 57 Ruidoso. Again, notice the best chance of rain kind of staying to the north of us. 51 for cloud cover, that 30% chance of some rain showers. For tomorrow, the thunderstorms likely to continue for the northern portion of our viewing area. 40% chance of rain for Ruidoso and a 20% chance for Silver City. Sierra Blanca will be at 94 degrees, by the way, tomorrow. El Paso, our forecast for tonight, 71 degrees, and then we'll be warming up to 95 degrees for your Monday. 20% chance for rain, south-southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Las Cruces for us tonight, 67 degrees with 92 degrees for our day tomorrow. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour for us. And here's a look at the next 7 days. 95 Monday, 94 on Tuesday, and then notice we go down to 91 on your Wednesday, 92 after that. And then the 20% chance of rain, as I mentioned, kind of stays consistent with our forecast. And notice we're slowly starting to transition to that fall-like weather pattern with those overnight lows getting into the upper 60s.
So it's going to get down into the lower 90s from now on, hopefully. 633, Kelly O'Connell, and you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in, and we'll be right back. I'm going to bring up a couple stories. Let me see what I got on tabs here. All right. The lady in Kentucky is appealing the gay marriage thing. Tim Tebow, big news on him. Donald Trump, Brady, are they? Is there a little love fest going on there? And Hillary got news about her. And then I'm going to do the next hour is going to be on civil disobedience. So we'll be right back. 6:33 a.m. 1450 a.m. Las Cruces. 523-1450 to call in. Be right back. All right, so we were getting an appeal on this this case in Kentucky, and so what is at stake? I guess what's at stake is the whether or not this clerk has to do this gay marriage. I'm trying to find a little clip for you here. I think I got some from ABC News here. But anyway, what do you think about that 523-1450? I know Probably a lot of people slept in today, but. And, okay, so no clip, but a defiant county clerk is willing to stay in jail for her beliefs, but she'd prefer to be a free woman. And, you know, one of the things that I do admire about this lady is that she does, I mean, she knew that she'd be made fun of, and she's a little bit heavy and, you know, a little bit. You know, not a young, beautiful girl, and I'm sure she knew that she'd get attacked. And you know how it is these days; you're not allowed to disagree with official opinion. But I kind of admire the way that she stood up and went after this issue. And you know, you can decide for yourself what you think her motivations were. But here is anyway for CBS This Morning. Appealing, getting thrown in jail for not doing a gay marriage.
New effort this morning to free a defiant Kentucky court clerk from jail. Kim Davis is starting her fifth day behind bars today. A judge sent her to jail after she refused to follow the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage. Jerika Duncan is at the Carter County Detention Center in Grayson, Kentucky. Jerika, good morning.
Good morning. Kim Davis has been reading the Bible to pass the time. That's according to her attorneys. She's been behind bars since last Thursday, but this morning her legal team is hopeful that she won't have to stay here much longer.
As Kim Davis spends another day in isolation, her lawyers are scrambling to get her out. In court documents filed Sunday, the attorneys appealed last week's contempt order that landed the county clerk in jail. Roger Ganim represents Davis.
Getting her out of jail is a priority for us because she doesn't belong there. She's a prisoner of conscience.
Free Kim Davis.
Over the weekend, hundreds gathered in 90-degree heat to voice their support for the Rowan County clerk, including her husband, Joe.
And I talked to her on the phone. She's in great spirits. We're joking, laughing, you know, cutting up. She said, honey, she said, I'm just as comfortable as can be.
And at churches in Moorhead, Kim Davis was on the minds of the faithful.
Pray for Kim Davis.
Sherman Chambers and his wife, Vernice, are planning to do more than just pray.
I will support her in any way she needs support. Money, or I'd even go to jail with her.
I want to do the things that must be done.
Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee also came to Davis's defense and plans to meet with her on Tuesday.
When is it that liberals get to choose which laws they support, but a county clerk in Kentucky who, acting on her Christian faith, is criminalized, jailed without bail because she acted on her conscience and according to the only law that is in front of her?
Still, GOP presidential hopeful John Kasich believes the county clerk should follow the court order.
I respect the fact that this lady doesn't agree, but she's also a government employee. She's not running a church.
To mark 1 week at this detention center, organizers who held this past weekend's rally are calling on Davis backers to fast on Thursday. Benita?
Jerika, thank you.
All right, so what do you think about that? All right, there's two ways to see this. Either she's just totally going off on her own beliefs, or she's standing up for the truth, you know. I mean, it depends really.
Annual gay
pride. A couple of things. Number one, it depends on what you think the truth is. That's going to influence your opinion. Some people are going to see gay marriage as just the wave of the future. It's the next evolution. Other people are going to see that it's, or believe that it's inherently wrong. But beyond that, whether you have a right to stand up against what you think is an unjust law is interesting. Now, here is a little background on this from Senator Cruz, which I thought this was a good kind of presentation of the ideas.
Annual gay pride parades took on new meaning on Sunday as people poured into the city streets to celebrate the Supreme Court's ruling legalizing same-sex marriage nationwide. Over the weekend, comments on that decision from Republican presidential candidates ranged from calls to respect the decision to support for an amendment that would reverse the ruling. Texas Senator Ted Cruz called it illegitimate and lawless. He would like a constitutional amendment that would abolish the lifetime appointment of Supreme Court justices and allow voters to have a chance to remove them from the bench. Cruz has got a new book out. It's called A Time for Truth, Reigniting the Promise of America. And he joins us now. Senator Cruz, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Savannah. Great to be with you.
Can't think of a better time to have you as a guest with these really consequential rulings coming down last week. You were quoted as saying these two decisions represented some of the darkest 24 hours in American history. And I have to say, that took me back. I can think of some pretty dark days in American history, 9/11, Civil War, Dred Scott. Is it right up there with you for that?
Oh, look, what happened last week is twice, back to back, the U.S. Supreme Court, a majority of the justices, violated their judicial oath. On Thursday of last week, the court rewrote Obamacare, rewrote the statute, ignored the language of the statute, and as a result, forced millions of people into this failed law. Millions of Americans are hurting. They've lost their jobs, have lost their health care because of Obamacare. And then the next day, the Supreme Court rewrote the Constitution and threw out the marriage laws of all 50 states. Now, listen, I've spent my life fighting to defend the Constitution, and there is a constitutional means. If someone wants to change the marriage laws in a state, the way the Constitution allows you to do so is to convince your fellow citizens to do so through the democratic process. What we saw instead is five unelected lawyers saying the views of 320 million Americans don't matter because they're going to enforce their own policy position.
Let me ask you about that, because one thing you also said was that you would support a Texas state clerk who refused to issue a license to a gay couple on religious grounds. Let me ask you this. If a state clerk refused to issue a marriage license to an interracial couple, would you agree with that too?
Well, there's no religious backing for that. And one of the things—
But you know that in the Loving Virginia versus Virginia case, which is that struck down the bans on interracial marriage, they used religious arguments to justify that.
There's no religious backing for that. And I have spent decades fighting against bigotry and racial oppression. I'm the son of a Cuban immigrant. Bigotry is fundamentally wrong. And one of the things I talk about in the book, A Time for Truth, is fighting to defend religious liberty. For me, religious liberty isn't some newfound campaign theme. I've spent two decades, when I was the Solicitor General of Texas, the chief lawyer for the state in front of the United States Supreme Court, over and over again, we fought and defended religious liberty and won. We defended the Ten Commandments and won. We defended the Pledge of Allegiance and won. One of the things I was really honored to do, I represented over 3 million veterans defending the Mojave Desert Veterans Memorial and won. And religious liberty is right at the foundation of our country.
Well, let me go back to this case that Loving versus Virginia, this is a precedent you're well aware of. This struck down a state ban on interracial marriage. This is something that many, many people see parallels with the same case that just decided gay marriage. You say it should be left to states. Would you have taken that same position on the case of interracial marriage, that that's not a constitutional right and the states should have been free to ban interracial marriage if they wanted to?
Of course not. And we fought a bloody civil war.
What's the difference in those two cases?
It is exactly what I said, that we fought a bloody civil war over the original sin of our country that was slavery. Slavery was grotesque and immoral. And some 600,000 Americans lost their lives, spilled their blood on American soil to expunge it. And we passed three amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution, that to ensure that everyone has equal rights regardless of race. And that was honoring the promise of the Constitution. It was the right thing to do. You know, one of the things that in my book, A Time for Truth, I talk about is my time clerking at the U.S. Supreme Court, trying to give people a window to what happens behind the scenes. It's the same thing I try to do in the Senate, where we're giving people an understanding, not just of what is said on the news, but what's actually happening behind closed doors, the role of money, and sadly, the corruption of both Republicans and Democrats who joined together in what I call the Washington cartel.
You talk about corruption, money, and politics, and yet you're suggesting this constitutional amendment that would subject Supreme Court justices to retention elections, mm-hmm. which sounds like injecting politics into the one branch of government the framers were very clear about. They did not want to have to be subject to the political winds. How do you explain that?
Well, let's be clear. The court has injected itself into politics. You've got, you know, Justice Scalia wrote two powerful dissents. I would encourage everyone to read Justice Scalia's dissents, where he says these decisions are a fundamental threat to democracy. And he says five unelected lawyers have declared themselves the rulers
would
of
elections
320
make it less
million
political?
Americans. What's it?
Well, anyway, that's Ted Cruz's take on the initial take. And I've got Mike McKay in the studio. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Kelly. Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you. You're supposed to be taking the day off.
Well, I'm laboring this day. Well, no, I thought I'd keep you company.
Fantastic. All right. So you've got this, and I think I mentioned to you off the air, we've got this thing. I'm kind of laying it out for people. This woman, Kim Davis, is either a rogue. She's operating outside of the system. She's bringing her own law into this and trying to make the court run off her law. Or she is a martyr of conscience. She's committing civil disobedience. She's being locked up for it. And she is operating on a law above the law. Which do you find more compelling?
I assume that she's sincere in yeah. her beliefs and so on, but she is, well, you tell me if I'm using the right term. Is she an officer of the court or officer?
Yes.
She's certainly an elected official, and her job duties include issuing licenses and so on. And I think if she cannot do that according to her own conscience, then she should step down. She should resign. This is a different case of civil disobedience. She is entrusted with carrying out the law.
Yeah.
So. And I always find it very, very interesting, no matter what side of the argument you're on. Like Ted Cruz was just saying, five unelected officials. I mean, if the ruling had gone the other way, those five unelected officials had said done away with gay marriage. You know,
but it's the
they
same
wouldn't have been unelected officials then. They would have been, you know, guys in their right mind who knew what they were talking about.
Right. But I mean, you're either going to support it or not. But the people on both sides, I mean, Lynn Ellen's in our own county before it was technically legal, authorized gay marriage. So, you know, I'm sure you probably supported that.
It wasn't a question of my support or not. That's what he did. He came out for it. He was probably could be described as somewhat of an activist in that particular regard.
So she's being an activist.
Well, she is certainly standing up for what she believes in. But at the same time, there doesn't seem to be if she's being civil, she is civilly disobedient. Well, what happens with that? Well, what are the consequences?
She's arrested. In jail.
She's in jail. So if she wants to sit there and be a martyr, then that's fine. If she wants to continue to be clerk, you would think that she would have to issue the licenses. And if she doesn't want to do either sit in jail or issue licenses, she should resign. She's got a lot of opportunities. She's got a lot of choices.
Maybe she's got a book and a movie now.
Maybe she will. Maybe she will.
Now,
it wouldn't be surprising.
How about the fact that she's been married four times? Does that disqualify her, in your mind, from taking part in this?
No, it doesn't. It might make some suspicious about her motivations and so on, that if she is that righteous a person to begin with. But at the same time, let us give her the benefit of the doubt that after, three previous marriages that didn't work out and so on, I always find it a little bit of a spurious argument when people are so adamant about defending marriage that, you know, let's face it, there are legitimate concerns with the state of marriage here and around the world when most marriages end in failure. And we're talking about heterosexual marriages. Most of them end in failure. Seems to me that people who are really committed to one another and committed to loving one another, that they should be able to do that.
Polygamy?
Well, I mean, you know, it's been popular in Utah for a long time, and Brigham Young and Joseph Smith were certainly supporters of it, and they had a religious argument for it. But I don't think that that's necessarily going to happen anytime soon. You know, this again, talk about spurious arguments. You know, like, oh, what's next? You know, marriages with animals and so on. Come on, I think that's a big. A big difference between what people just want. They just want to live their lives and have a family and live with their loved one. It's not that big of a deal.
All right. You heard Mike McKay on that. Kelly O'Connell, take a little break here. Elton John's Tiny Dancer. 6:51, we're going to come back. I've got a great clip from Martin Luther King on this.
On marriage?
Not on polygamy. Yes. No, not on civil disobedience.
Oh, civil disobedience. Okay.
I have a little bit on the Boston Tea Party, too. It's going into the next hour. 6:52, you're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. I'm delighted and shocked that Mike McKay...
Shocked?
Mike McKay showed up, and he's in the studio. So 523-1450. Might want to press him on some of these positions. We'll be right back.
Ballerina, you must have seen her dancing in the sand.
It's 6:55. Mike, what did you think about that story about the NMSU bus getting burglarized?
What a shame. I mean, it was a rough Saturday for the Aggies. There's no question about it. What with the loss to Florida, of course, they knew it was going to be tough going in. You know, one of these money games. They go on the road, they get beat up, and yet they earn $1 million or so for the athletic department. But after a 61-13 loss, they go back to the buses, and this apparently not the players' bus, but the bus of the administration and supporters and so on. There was an article in the paper this morning at the Las Cruces Sun News in the sports section. It says 5 takeaways from Aggies' season opener. I thought that was an interesting headline. There was a lot more than 5 takeaways, obviously. There were laptops taken away, passports taken away.
Well, a couple of things.
Rough trip to Gainesville, Florida.
A couple of things stood out to me. Number one, the guy immediately blames the bus driver. He said he didn't see any sign of entry. And number two, they said that they're busy. There's been robberies in the area. Busy. They're going up and down the street watching for criminals, but apparently not two.
Yeah, they said that the police presence in that particular area before, during, and after the game. But right, they were looking. And, well, I don't know if they threw the driver under the bus, so to speak. Pun intended. But presumably, if he was the guy in charge of the bus when everyone else left for the game and he took off to watch the game.
He might have seen a cute girl.
He might have. I'm sure that there were more than a few at the game.
Cute girls. Did you hear about that girl that got the concussion during the U.S. Open?
No.
And they're openly trying to figure out if her story is right. She claims she went on a break. She came into the locker room. The lights were out. Nobody was in there. Wet floor, fell down, got a concussion. Mm. And I'm just wondering if somebody, maybe an opposing player, I mean, beautiful girl, but maybe somebody popped her.
I don't know. When you said a concussion at the U.S. Open, at first I'm thinking, well, wait a second. The U.S. It's tennis. That's what we're talking
yeah.
about. And usually getting hit by a tennis ball wouldn't knock you out, but it could leave a bit of a welt on your forehead, but that's about it. But different circumstances, evidently, huh?
Yeah, who knows? She could have got the Harry Reid treatment.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. Harry Reid, how's he doing? Is he still wearing those dark glasses?
Yeah, he's lost the sight in one of his eyes.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was actually was offered treatment by Rand Paul.
Well, he's an eye surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, quite accomplished. He still does surgery. He was saying the other day, not too long ago, that if elected president, and it doesn't look likely that he would, but he would continue to do that. He would continue to operate if he was elected president.
Really?
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Isn't that? Well, that certainly would be a first.
Probably. Although apparently the ladies like the way that Bill Clinton operated.
Different kind of operation, I suppose.
Absolutely. So, and we're running out of time on this first hour, but Donald Trump is continuing to go up and his negatives have plummeted. There were 53% of the people that were opposed to him, totally opposed to him, and now it's down to 23%.
It is a remarkable story, isn't it?
It is incredible. And with Hillary struggling, it just makes you wonder who's going to be the final two combatants.
Now, I ask you, you've asked me previous times when I've stopped in for your show, Kelly. And I've said, I still, no matter how these polls keep on going, and they keep on going up, and they look great for Donald Trump, I still believe strongly that he will not ultimately be the Republican candidate. I don't. But do you believe that he's got a good shot at it?
I think he's got a better shot than anybody else. And I think the only people that could challenge him are really, at right now anyway, Ben Carson. Outsiders, people have fallen in love with outsiders. So let's we'll come back and talk about this, but we got more civil disobedience to cover. Kelly O'Connell with Mike McKay, AM Las Cruces. We'll be right back. So does Donald Trump care? Is he just playing a game? Some people out there believe that Donald Trump, who's a very smart guy and very accomplished.
Wharton School of Business, good grades. He's a smart guy.
He's from New York. You know, he pushes people around. He's from New York like all New Yorkers do. And some people think that it's just the next game that he's gotten into, and he's going to see if he can master it. He doesn't really care one way or the other about what his beliefs are, Mike.
Well, we were having a bit of a discussion off the air, and you mentioned his fearlessness. He can say what's on his mind. He can just go up there and say, and he's fearless. And in that regard, that sets him apart from your typical politician who very often, more now than ever, but certainly for many, many decades, controlled or at least guided by consultants and by polls and so on. But he doesn't care. I don't think he really cares ultimately if he's elected president. So he can be fearless. He's in it for the game itself.
He's got a second career.
Yeah, well, it's the same career.
Self-promotion.
So he can be fearless if you don't care. And I think he's even talked about the art of the deal. You go in, you know, you have to be willing to walk away from it. That makes you more fearless. But if you're so worried about the outcome that you're somewhat paralyzed by the things that you might say or might be said to you and so on. But if you don't care, if you are fearless in that regard, then you can walk away from the deal. And I think he could walk away from this presidential run when it starts to fizzle and look back on it and say, hey, it was a great ride.
But, you know, when you say that, it almost seems to suggest that he doesn't really care about America. Or maybe it was other people saying that Bill Clinton talked him into this, and they're doing it as a joke to help Hillary.
Well, to your first point, you know, so many people, I don't necessarily think that, and it never even occurred to me that he might not care about America. He certainly cares about business and prosperity and things that will make him richer. And so I think in that regard, he'd have to care about America. And I won't even question, even remotely question his patriotism. But one hears constantly from the right about how Barack Obama hates America. And that, I think, is patently ridiculous on its face.
Ridiculous, but some people would point to the open border policy that he seems to support and saying he obviously wants to dilute down what America is with foreign people. Is that not correct?
No, I don't believe that that's a policy of his at all. I think he's trying to address the problem, which everybody agrees exists.
What's
on the border. The problem on how to regulate the borders and how to be fair to people who have spent decades here already, how to deal with people who are in this country illegally. I don't think he's trying to push forward a program that would just open the borders and that ultimately so more people can come in and vote for him or vote for the Democratic Party. I don't think one is linked with the other, personally.
But they say that there was a story that came out that there's a secret system that's put together, or at least one that's kind of behind the scenes that kind of is taking these people. The vast majority of them will never go to court and kind of spreading them across the country. Let me ask you this. Wouldn't it be a better use of our time, our efforts to demand that these other countries change as opposed to taking these products of a failed system in just wave after wave?
You mean Central America and Mexico, you mean?
Yeah.
And how and they changed what? Not allow their citizens to leave?
No, to change their economy, to change their, bring in some more democracy, make it safer. Honduras, for example, the most dangerous country in the world. You can't blame anybody from wanting to leave a place like that.
Well, easier said than done. People who are in charge in Honduras may sincerely want to clean up crime, and or they may be in a position that they feel like, well, that they got what they want, and so the rest be damned. I don't know. It's obviously a very complicated issue, and certainly if people weren't rushing to leave those places, then it would be much less of a problem, you know, for us. But it's layered.
It is a layered problem. It's also in Europe, and we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, gentlemen. This is Sergio again. How you doing?
Good morning, Sergio. Hope you're well, and what's on your mind?
Well, sir, I was just listening to your conversation there and about the people blooding the border. You know, am I wrong to think that they're coming here for a better life? You know, is that, do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, now, if that's the case, well, they're coming to a country where the economy is stagnant. I wonder what's going to be the repercussions of, you know, the outcome of the flooding of these people, you know, these poor. And I know most of them are trying to come here because of the poverty and the violence. But my question to you is, how do you feel about what I'm about to say is that Kelly made a comment about maybe changing the governance of these other countries, because they do have the resources to do so. And we're giving them money on top of that, you know, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know how much. I don't have the you know, the accurate figures, but if we're allowing them money and they have the resources, it has to be the government. With you know, they're probably greedier and more corrupt than us. So I mean, how do you fix that? Because I reiterate, these people are coming with a dream that they're not going to be able to fulfill.
Mike?
Well, I agree that people are obviously going through terrible circumstances and arduous journeys because they're hoping for a better life, and would be wonderful if these countries where they originate would change their system so they would have a better life. Obviously, it would be better for us, would be better for them, but there has to be that will to change. Who's in charge?
Well,
if you have sincere people in charge as opposed to corrupt people, and I don't know what the actual situation is specifically in Honduras, but other countries, but even if you have sincere people in charge, that doesn't necessarily mean they could just wave a magic wand and
of course not
make
course
things
not.
Better.
But real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm just saying, how does this country go about making a positive, progressive change to these other governments that might produce a little bit higher quality of life for these immigrants, you know?
Well, as you pointed out, we are already supplying most of these governments with money, and usually there's some sort of a quid pro quo. We give you this money, and you use it towards drug enforcement or for one of the programs, irrigation, and any number of different things. And it's in the hope that it would make a better world for them in their own particular countries and so on. But these things are ongoing. I mean, we'll never, you know, the whole issue of nation building, which is a discussion and has been a discussion over many years. Is it our job, or even if we accept it as our job, can we transform these countries? I don't think we can.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. And Sergio, what do you think about this? I mentioned the other day, there was a doctrine during the Cold War called the captive nations doctrine. And it everybody knows it. You may not have heard the phrase. Everybody knows this idea that we were advocating to cause the steel wall, the communist nations. We're going to force them through hook or by crook to evolve into democracy and therefore better the lives of millions or billions of people. And I think that we need an updated version of this. The old list was all these Eastern Bloc nations and Cuba and stuff. I think we need a new version of that. Let's advocate. Let's push to evolve these nations. If not, Mike, Sergio, we're going to have just wave after wave forever.
Exactly.
And it has been going on forever, obviously. But certainly, there's no question, if in fact that these nations were suddenly transformed into Edens, then that would solve our problem. But easier said than done.
But are we even trying?
My question would, you know, my question is that, or my comment is that, you know, this is, you know, this is a great country. There's no doubt about it in my mind, and in a lot of people's minds. But we have the influence, if you will, to make some progressive changes to these other countries, you know. And it just seems like there was a time when we sent billions of dollars in medical, you know, aid and food to other countries, only to find out that the government was hoarding it from the people, actually turning around and selling it in black market. And that kind of mentality, I believe in my heart of hearts, is happening with the money we're sending them. They're not doing anything about it except funneling it off the top, putting it in their pockets or in bank accounts, and they're not being held accountable.
So, Sergio,
something has to be done, or it's just going to become worse here.
Who would you deal with then?
The presidents, the premiers, the generals who are corrupt. Get into, you know, I mean, we can go into other countries where people have talked about where we've overthrown governments.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
what I'm saying is
that's
people,
a documented fact. Why can't we use some influence and muscle?
In the case of countries that we may be sending money and to officials that are corrupt and taking it, so on, those are the ones that we're dealing with. The alternative, and we've certainly used this alternative on more than a few occasions, is coup. It'll remove those people from power and put the people, presumably, that who are your friends and who are the honest and decent ones. That doesn't always work out that way.
What if we had done a coup, Sergio, Mike, in Iraq? What if we had gone in, instead of taking on the whole country, what if we had just removed the leader?
Well, it's been in our agenda we've done it before.
What if we had a doctrine, we're going to kill the despots of the world? Now, that might sound horrible, but we went into Iraq and killed a whole bunch of people, many of them innocent. And
whereas if you remove just the head, Saddam Hussein in this particular case.
Yeah, which we did anyway.
But you know, would there has to be something in place.
Like Kelly said, it sounds horrible, but maybe that's what needs to be done.
We could airlift Hillary Clinton. We could have airlifted Hillary Clinton into Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could hear her speeches or her platform for president over there. They're either suicide or going to civil unrest.
Certainly, with regard to removing the head of any particular country, I wonder how many people know the history of Iran. I'm talking about the modern history of Iran, when they had a duly elected government in the early 50s. That government was deposed at the behest of the
CIA.
British government, but by the CIA, and the Shah was put in place, and he was our friend.
Right.
He was our friend for decades after that. But there's lots of evidence to say that there was a lot of corruption, a lot of cruelty, a lot of repressiveness, and so on. And so, consequently, when the revolution happened in the late 70s, there were a lot of understandably upset and irate Iranians.
Iran was kind of unique in that it was a highly literate and a very sophisticated culture. It's an ancient culture, the Persians.
When they were
taken over by the Ayatollah, it was taking them back to the Stone Age, basically.
Well, I'm sorry, but
I was going to say real quick before I forget, because I'm kind of forgetful. This has to be done within the government, and it's not happening. You take, for instance, I heard Kelly talk the other day about Gaddafi changing, you know, and, you know, it can be done. But in certain countries, it isn't, because they're just too mule-headed, hard-headed about changing it. And I reiterate again. Our influence and our money and our funds that are being, funneled over there.
All right, Sergio,
good
point.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Glad you brought up Gaddafi, because that's an example, exact parallel to what you're talking about. Say if we had just removed Saddam Hussein.
A ridiculous example that shows the error of the idea.
Well, right. Gaddafi is gone, but there's nothing in its place.
The country is run by rebels, and they've become oil billionaires, and now ISIS, the true power of ISIS may not be the ideology. It may be the oil billions that's driving them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sergio, thanks for the call. Folks, we've got to take a little bit of break here. We've got a fascinating – I've got – Mike, you interested in getting into the history of American civil disobedience?
I love history, and if you're going to take us down that path, I'll go with you, Kelly.
Folks, we'll be right back. I'm delighted and honored to have Mike McCain, my mentor, so you can blame him for all
– Don't blame me.
Blame him for all my stupid habits. We'll be right back at 721 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 805-6180. We'll be right back.
Now she's in me, always with me. Tiny dancer in my hand.
And so we've been talking about, we've been talking about a little bit of what it's like to be the number one dog in the fight around the world and to put our will onto other countries and not always have it work out.
You know, we are the number one. Do you believe in America still the number one country, the greatest country in the world?
By default.
By default?
We've fallen from where we were before the Iraq War, but by default, what's the other country that's greater than more influential?
Well, certainly there are other countries, and China is very influential just more recently with all their stock market problems.
Does any country
economic problems that's rippled around the world? We do have to have a world view, certainly. But back to my original point, there is so much greatness that I think that we all celebrate about America. And yet, there's all this discontent, as if and I think tremendous exaggeration, and not the least of which coming from Donald Trump about how bad things are, how awful, how we lose everything, we never win anything, where everybody is dumping on us. I don't believe that is an accurate portrayal.
Are we number one, Mike? Are we number one?
Are we number one in many respects? Yeah, sure. I believe that.
I mean, China is economically strong, but they've fallen. Their military is not up to snuff. But I think what people would look at China and say, China might be great, but I would never want to move there. Most people would say that. They want to come here, whether it's true or not, that we're number one in liberty, we're number one in economic opportunity, like Sergio was saying. People identify that with us.
And even though China has moved more and more towards capitalism and as a result has grown their economy to
massive,
extraordinary extent,
massive.
They still are a totalitarian country. So they can keep control on the situation better than a democratic country. I think Donald Trump would be probably a better premier of China and be more effective than if he were elected president.
Mike,
because even if he were elected president, he still can't just unilaterally change things.
523-1450, if you're part of the Trump campaign and you want to challenge Mike on Trump becoming the next premier.
Not
of China.
Accusing him of being a communist, by the way. I do not think that Donald Trump is a communist by any shape or stretch of the word.
Did you know Sarah Palin has been drawn into the aura, she's been drawn into the penumbra, whatever you want to call it, the circle of Trump supporters?
Sure. Yeah. That's not surprising to me.
Why?
Because I would think that given her history, that she would be aligning herself.
That's not a compliment.
It's not a compliment. It's not disparaging either. Given her political history, it doesn't surprise me that she would align herself with a popular now Republican candidate. And that's why I put in now, because, you know, Donald Trump is not an ideologue, as some people on the right are, and some people on the left. Donald Trump will go whichever the wind blows, ultimately. That's the thing that makes me question about, oh, he's so honest, he never, you know, speaks an untruth, and he's the only one telling the truth. He'll go whichever way, ultimately, the wind blows.
Are you a fan of Mickey Mantle's?
Well, he was a great ball player, and I'm a New Yorker.
Another great switch hitter. Thank you very much.
It certainly, and he could do it on both sides of the plate, sure.
All right, I've got a little clip here from, we're going to get into civil disobedience, but here's a little bit from Palin, if you don't believe it, of course you do, just talking about Trump and Obama.
Donald Trump made a lot of headlines this week when he appeared to mistake the Quds Force, an Iranian military group, for the Kurds, a Middle Eastern people. He made his comments during an interview with conservative talk show host Hugh Hewitt. Senator Marco Rubio said about this, if you don't know the answer to these questions, you're not going to be commander-in-chief. You're not fit to be commander-in-chief, he suggested. Trump says that the questions amounted to a game of gotcha. What did you think?
I think I'd rather have a president who is tough and puts America first than can win a game of Trivial Pursuit. Some of those questions, I don't know if they would have the answers, but I don't think the public gives a flying flip if somebody knows who today is a specific leader of a specific region or religion or anything else, because that leader will change, of course, when the next president comes into power, just based on the volatility of politics in these other areas. So I don't think the public is so concerned about that. And then, you know, it's kind of subjective, too, right? Whether a candidate is worthy to be given attention and respect and be taken seriously if they don't know the leader of some a tribe or a religion or even a country. When how about other candidates who may not know the price of a barrel of oil today or how much oil it is that we are importing from foreign nations, unfriendly foreign nations, and we have a ban on exporting our own oil, and we have prohibitions and bans on drilling for our own oil.
Good points there on oil, but her issue is, and I saw the interview, or at least I saw a clip of the interview with this gentleman, who's a very smart guy. He's a law professor, and he does a
very conservative, by the way.
Yeah, but I immediately thought this guy has been drawn into this anti-Trump circle.
He may be very concerned about the future of conservatism here in this country.
You admitted Fox News appeared to be, and Megyn Kelly appeared to be, going after Trump during that first debate.
I didn't specify Megyn Kelly. I said Fox News. Yeah. She asked that question with regard to women and calling them pigs.
But also will you sign the pledge? First couple of questions out of the box meant to take him down. I think the Republican Party is getting together in deciding that he's not a Republican.
Right. And I think that's true of Fox News.
Yeah. So whether you like Trump or not, he appears to be the enemy of the elite leadership of the GOP.
He's certainly the one who keeps on getting all the oxygen out of the room for everybody else. But I had to chuckle listening to Sarah Palin. I can imagine Sarah Palin 8 years ago in a radio interview such as that. You know,
me too.
Forget about the Quds. I wonder if she would even know who the Kurds were.
Well, you know, I think that she's a smart lady and she knows her own opinion on various things. And I think that they went after her because, once again, she was more of an independent, more of a kind of a salt of the earth person. She was this little soccer mom who ran for mayor and then improbably gets cast up into the governorship. And what frightened the people is the same thing with her is the same thing with Trump. We can't control this person because she's obviously some sort of a Christian. She's kind of a common sense person. She's not looking to tap into the latest policy. And same thing with Trump. What do you think?
Well, I think that she is a smart person. There's no question about it. She couldn't have gotten the elected governor of any state without having a certain amount of knowledge. It's certainly about was relevant in Alaska and so on. She's no dummy. But with regard to her knowledge of the world, I think it's probably more limited than most people who find themselves running for high office.
All right, so we've got Obama, who's lived overseas, who knows intimately Islam. He says one of his favorite sounds is this
call to prayer.
Yeah, the call to prayer, the Adnan, or whatever it's called. And yet we see that his public policy decisions have been curious ones. Often he's informed about the world, and yet it didn't seem to make him a better foreign policy president. What do you think?
Well, obviously, people have different opinions on the lack of success or the success that his administration has had. Obviously, people on the right think he's the worst president ever. People on the left think that his predecessor was the worst president ever. Obviously, people have strong opinions.
A time of strong and divisive opinions.
Right. And I do think that there is a certain amount of vitriol that it permeates our dialogue
and
has been for many years. And I don't think that that's helpful. I think dialogue is very, very important. Thoughtful dialogue, but just these knee-jerk reactions and ad hominem attacks are very, very unhelpful to the advance of human nature and our
fair enough. We want
state
to
of the world.
We want to advance. Human nature wants to evolve. We're going to talk about this idea of civil disobedience with a few choice clips in just a moment. Hey, it's Kelly.
I don't know how you can call it civil disobedience. This is religious, fanatical disobedience.
Who is?
Huh?
Who?
The little clerk. The little clerk. This is, she doesn't have some civil disobedience. This is all about her religious beliefs,
Kathy,
Kelly.
Hold on a second. What about MLK? That was religious, too. He was a minister.
He was a minister, but he was going for civil rights. He wasn't relating, like this little clerk is. What if I was Catholic and in there, Kelly? She wouldn't have been able to get married the second time, and all her kids right now would be illegitimate. So, I mean,
how do you know her kids aren't illegitimate?
Religion out of government. This is what does it for religious people. It's not enough to practice your own religion over here. You have to impose your religion on others. And being gay marriage is not being imposed on Miss whatever her name is. She has no reason
Kathy,
to do that other
Kathy,
than beyond belief.
Kathy, Mike is asking if you might not want to say your piece on the air.
Mike?
Yeah, Mike.
No,
Mike McKay.
I mean, I get screwed by you guys on the air all the
Kathy,
time.
Come on.
Well,
Kathy, when have I ever gone after you?
All the time. You and your.
I just read your texts. I read your texts and then I say, "Oh, Kathy, we're on the air."
Yeah,
hold on.
You did them pretty well, Kelly. I must say.
Hold on.
I'm just saying, if a religious person has a problem in a government job of serving everybody, they're all paying taxes, then she needs to step down. I mean, I'm not denying her religious beliefs. I'm not going to make her marry some woman,
folks,
but step aside and let other people live
and,
their lives and have the ability.
Kathy, we are on the air. Do you mind stating your piece?
I think she should step down. I mean, this is the thing that burns me with religion. I mean, I don't want people to be denied the ability to practice what they believe. If that's what she believes, she's not being forced to. She can step aside because everybody in that county is paying taxes. The gays, the blacks, the whatever, everybody's paying their fair share when it comes to taxes, but she's only going to serve a small group of those people that she approves of according to a religion that she's had an epiphany about. That is the most pathetic, sad story I have heard in this country in a long time. And then so many willing to defend it, her religious right to deny other people their rights because her religion should trump everything.
Yeah.
So, it is beyond belief to me that this is happening in this country, in this day and age.
Kathy, I know that you're opinionated about this, but what's the difference between this particular fight and the fight of Martin Luther King?
You know, Kelly, Martin Luther King was, you know, yes, he was a religious man and he was inspired by his religion, but he was seeking, you know, all those black people, were they all his religion? Were they following this exact way? No. I mean, he was simply looking for freedom for the people that have been oppressed in the Civil War. Miss Kelly is not being forced to do anything personally that she believes is reprehensible. I mean, she's not being forced to marry anybody. She can step aside and let other people take over her duties.
I think you make a good point. I think, Kathy, you make a I personally think you make a good point. I don't think Martin Luther King's movement was a religious movement at all. He happened to be a Lutheran minister. Or, I'm sorry, he's probably a Baptist minister, I think, of Martin
Baptist,
Luther.
Yeah.
But it was not a religious movement. It was a civil movement.
Right.
And I have to agree with Kathy insofar as that, you know, this isn't about, nobody is impinging on her religious freedom. She says, I don't feel my conscience would allow me to issue this license. Step back, resign, go away. That's it.
I have to agree with that.
I think that, Kathy, you there? I think she's gone. So anyway, my take on this is that Martin Luther King was religious and it was an expression of his religion that he would do that. So anyway, without further ado, here's a clip of Martin Luther King talking about his stuff. Check this out.
Today on Meet the Press is Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., who is in San Francisco. On our panel of reporters in Washington, D.C., you have just met Lawrence Spivak. Our other reporters today are Tom Wickert of the New York Times, James J. Kilpatrick of the Richmond News Leader, and John Chancellor of NBC News. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Wickert.
Dr. King, you said a moment ago that Alabama was a state that gives respectability to resistance and defiance of the law. And you listed an observance of the law by local agencies in the South as one of the cardinal aims that you were seeking. Yet on March the 9th, you led the second march on Montgomery in violation of a federal injunction not to march. You said that order was unjust. And John Lewis, one of your colleagues, said that the Negroes had a constitutional right to march, injunction or no injunction. Now, was that in keeping with the spirit of nonviolence and the restraint that has always characterized your movement? And could you explain your reasoning in defying the court order that day?
Well, let me say two things to that, Mr. Wicker. First, I did not consider myself defying a court order that particular day. I consulted with my attorneys before the march, and they stated that they felt that it was an invalid order and that it would not be, that I would not be in contempt of violating the court order if I led the march to the point of having a moral confrontation with the state troopers at the point where the people were brutalized on Sunday. So I still don't consider that breaking a court order or breaking what I consider an unjust law. On the other hand, I must be honest enough to say that I do feel that there are two types of laws. One is a just law and one is an unjust law. I think we all have moral obligations to obey just laws. On the other hand, I think we have moral obligations to disobey unjust laws because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good. I think the distinction here is that when one breaks a law the conscience tells him is unjust, he must do it openly, he must do it cheerfully, he must do it lovingly, he must do it civilly, not uncivilly, and he must do it with a willingness to accept the penalty. And any man who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and willingly accepts the penalty by staying in jail in order to arouse the conscience of the community on the injustice of the law is at that moment expressing the very highest respect for law.
Well, I can sympathize with a good deal of that, but it seems to me you get into a very difficult point here at which one man's conscience is set, in fact, above the conscience of society, which has invoked the law. How are we to enforce law when a doctrine is preached that one man's conscience may tell him that the law is unjust when other men's conscience don't tell them that?
And I think you enforce it, and I think you deal with it by not allowing anarchy to develop. I do not believe in defying the law, as many of the segregationists do. I do not believe in evading the law, as many of the segregationists do. The fact is that most of the segregationists and racists that I see are not willing to suffer enough for their beliefs in segregation, and they are not willing to go to jail. I think the chief norm for guiding the situation is the willingness to accept the penalty.
And there you go. That's the difference in his argument, that he's willing to accept the penalty.
And so Kim Davis has accepted the penalty.
No, she hasn't.
She's in jail.
She doesn't. She hasn't accepted the penalty.
She's
in jail. She was, in fact, the lawyer. Her lawyer today is putting forth an appeal based on the lack of expectation that she would go to jail, that she wasn't given enough notice that she would have to suffer the penalty of going to jail. So it's a totally different argument.
No, it's not. I mean, in other words, to prove that she's sincere, she has to stay in jail without appealing. That's crazy. We got a phone call.
No. I'm saying the point of appeal is that she had no expectation to go to jail.
All right. We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Richard.
Richard, what's up? Good morning.
Well, I was listening to Kathy, and I got the impression that what she was saying was a country or the government thereof being totally devoid of religion. I can't understand how that can be when everybody in this country has one religion or another. Certainly,
everybody doesn't.
There's a satanic churches. They used to be Catholic churches. I mean, you know, come on.
So, I mean, you're saying that you don't really accept her position because you think it's said as an atheist or a secularist?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it sounds like she's describing an atheist government. How can that be when everybody in this country has one religion or another?
Mike,
certainly.
Well, first of all,
like I say, certainly satanic religion is rampant in this city.
Well, Richard, first of all, everybody in this country doesn't have a religion. In fact, more and more of the numbers are going towards people who...
I would argue that atheism is a form of religion because it's a rejection of religion.
I would argue that is not correct.
Thanks.
Well,
thanks for the call.
It is being devoid of religion.
Thanks for the call. We got another call here. Thanks. All right, so... Thanks for the call to Kelly.
And I don't believe, by the way, that nothing that I heard in Kathy's statement was that the government should be atheist. It should be devoid of we should be devoid of religion in this country. It's just that one person's belief shouldn't necessarily. The whole purpose of freedom of religion is that one person's belief doesn't take precedence over another.
Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Richard Kelly. I've only heard part of your show, but I do have a comment. I think Martin Luther King was acting as an individual. The lady in Kentucky is a representative of government, and she has to follow the laws that the government and the Supreme Court has upheld that, in essence, upheld that law.
All right. So Richard, let me ask you one thing. During, let's say, a worst case scenario, during the movement of Hitler, there would have been public officials that were asked to do things that most people would think were totally ridiculous. Were all of those people supposed to resign, or should some of them stay in office and fight against the evil?
Well, I would think they should fight against the evil.
Well, in her mind, this might be an extremely important thing that
No.
she's doing. No?
No, she is a representative of government.
People, okay.
She's acting as a government official.
Richard,
she's required to follow the law
Richard,
and the Constitution
listen.
In the United
in
States.
In the government
and
of Germany, there was a movement to make Jewish people illegal.
Let's talk about her.
Public officials were used to put all these people in boxcars, move them across the country, and then liquidate them. So those were government officials.
Why don't we talk about the issue at hand?
I'm trying to draw out an analogy that you might find interesting. I'm not saying what she's fighting against is the same thing as Auschwitz, of course.
But do you understand she is an agent of government?
Yeah,
and when she
speaks,
it's the government speaking, and she's,
I understand,
by her oath required to uphold the law. And as far as I'm concerned, if she can't uphold the law, she should resign.
So in theory, you accept that some people stay in office and fight against evil, but in practical terms, that's not allowed. Every person who's in government, who's running anything that's doing something repugnant or asked to do something they don't believe in, needs to just get out, even Nazi Germany.
There you go again, Kelly. I'm talking about this lady in
you're
this
right.
situation right now.
Okay, Richard, I'm listening to what you're saying. I don't think that summary that Kelly just gave accurately portrays what you were saying. But addressing the German government, what if everybody said, I won't do it? I will leave this position. I will not follow this, the unjust rounding up of the Jews and sending, I won't be a part of it. What if everybody did that? Then, in fact, they resigned their position. They probably wouldn't have been able to accomplish what they did.
Thanks for the call, Richard. Folks, we're going to be right back and continue on and finish this out. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450.
Bye.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
This is David.
What's up, David?
Hey, David. Kelly, how are you?
Good. How
so
you doing?
What if this lady was, she's an elected official, but what if at one time Kentucky also voted against gay marriage and then was overturned by five people? So that would mean now she's doing what she was elected to do.
Yeah, she was originally elected to not do gay marriage, and now she's doing it, and the law has changed, but she didn't enter office with that understanding, right?
Well, but what I'm saying is, you know, every state that has voted on gay marriage has voted against it.
Right.
And then five people have told every state that voted against it, you're wrong. Those five people, they have a political agenda, and the voters are the ones that should be right. So this lady has some grounds to stand on by doing what she's doing, because she was elected by people that voted against gay marriage and also voted for her.
Mike? I agree 100%.
And so that's what I'm stating. That's my case.
You want to say it on the air?
Sure.
You got about 30 seconds here.
Okay.
So you're not traveling.
I'm driving down the road.
Okay, you're traveling.
Or you can state it for me if you want.
Well, I think you summed it up pretty well. I think that's a good point. We'll you can say it real quick, and then we'll take you off the air.
Okay. Let me know when I'm live.
Well, we're on in about 5 seconds.
Okay.
All right, so we have David on the line, and David, you had an argument against throwing this lady, forcing her out of office because she's opposed to the law. What was your argument?
My argument was every state that has voted for gay marriage has not voted for gay marriage not to be legal, and I think Kentucky is one of them. This lady was elected by Kentucky people, so in essence, she is doing what the people of Kentucky expected her to do because they voted for her. And now all of a sudden, all these states and her are just being told by five people, because they have a political agenda, that now what you're doing is against the law. So I think she is doing what she needs to do, and good for her.
Thanks for the call, David. So, Mike, what about
so
that?
So what?
So local rule. Why is it, these states vote for what they want to do, and then the federal government comes along at the highest level and says you're all wrong, even though each individual state has voted against this?
Well, I mean, laws change. The Supreme Court was set up by our founders to operate in a certain way. We've got the three branches of government, and the law has changed.
What about when the law is wrong?
Well, then one should argue the case that Martin Luther King Jr. just made very eloquently, that you should argue against laws that you think are wrong, and you should be willing to take the consequences.
Okay. Another maybe last call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, it's me.
Briefly.
Hey, Kelly, isn't marriage a personal and religious choice? Why are our tax dollars spent on this stuff? Licenses, tax exemptions, divorce courts, etc. Can you explain to me why the federal and state governments are in the marriage business?
Thank you.
Well, that's an interesting point, but off the point. That's another argument altogether.
Argument for another day, but I think that what you're doing with the federal government and is wiping out the ability for self-government under some theory that the Supreme Court's always right. And Ted Cruz made a good point on that clip that I didn't play.
I'm not arguing that the Supreme Court is always right. It's just, but it becomes the law of the land.
What I'm trying to say, Mike, is if that's what people want, then do it the right way. Get it on a amendment to the Constitution. Don't force it through with five people.
So we should do away with the Supreme Court?
I never said that.
Well, should we do away the system of the Supreme Court?
I never said that.
Well, then the system says that the majority rules on the Supreme Court. You're saying we should change that system.
Allow me to finish. What I was going to say is we've got a reason for amendments to the Constitution. Would you like to throw the amendments out, the amendment system?
There are two separate things altogether. Should we? I'm not saying
we
should.
I never said that we don't need a Supreme Court.
Well, what's the point? It's not one or the other.
My point is you've got five people dictating to 300 million people what they should do when it's up to the – should be up to the states. The idea of federalism is local rule.
What if the five people had gone the other way?
Then
you would have been green. They've got it right.
It would,
by golly,
you can demagogue me on this, but it would be in keeping with what people voted for across the United States.
Listen, a lot of people feel differently on this particular subject. Obviously, it's not that everybody feels one way.
It's an activist Supreme Court. How do you know they're right?
Supreme Court.
Thanks for listening in, folks.